If this is the first time you're listening to this podcast, I really suggest going to one of the other episodes. This is more of a grab bag about what's going on in my life right now while I'm staying at the Intranet Archive, the place I call my home and work, and kind of what's going on in my mind as I go through the end of the year, along with a number of other pretty random subjects. This is the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast, a podcast about technology, history, stories, and debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters who have helped make this podcast possible. So about every 2 or 3 months, I come down to the archive for 1 or 2 weeks, and what I do on site versus when I live in New York is basically catch up with all of my coworkers, find out what's going on with the place that might not be mentioned in the Slack or emails, and generally just reconnect with the actual physical space that the archive lives in. A lot of people know about the building for the Internet Archive. It's a renovated church that got abandoned basically in 1970 and was sold to us in 2006. And it's been turned into a combination data center and working space and scanner facility. And it's a pretty strange place to experience if you've never been there before. When I'm here, I really like to give tours to people. So I gave about a half dozen tours. I would just go on Twitter and say, hey, who wants to come visit here and see what's going on? And occasionally people would make the leap, come down and get themselves a 1 or 2 hour tour of how the place works, both online and off. If you've never been inside the building, there's really several ways this building could have gone when it was purchased. It could have been completely renovated from the inside, so the outside was basically a shell hiding a bunch of machines and office space. But in fact, they kind of crafted everything around the shape of the internal building. So if you happen to go upstairs from our lobby, there's a full great room, a massive collection of pews and a stage and a pipe organ, and then some computers, along with well over 100 small clay figurines of people who have worked here for more than 3 years, past and present. I'm in there, a bunch of other people are in there, and it always freaks out the guests. Scattered among the other levels of the building are different rooms for things like the financial department, our artist in residence, David, and a guest room, which is where I stay when I'm here, and which is currently partially filled with a bunch of software that people have granted me that I'm not quite ready to put into full cold storage. You know, basically I leave a bunch of things lying around and come in and clean up. That's basically how I spend this time. On the other end of the bay is our Richmond Physical Archive, and in there are all the software products that people have sent me, along with the tens of thousands of manuals that were rescued a while back. I took a tour of everything this week, and I'm so happy to say that permanent storage is now in place for these items. It was permanent before, but I mean that they've been properly marked off and put into shipping containers that are inside of a building. And so they're in the catalog, and while we don't have per-item catalogs, everything is in an easy-to-find space, and my plan next year is for people to have a weekend where we sort through it and start to prepare it for digital ingestion and making it available to the public in a wide way, which I think was the goal all along, and so it'll be great to actually get that going. 2017 has been a pretty mixed year for me. I nearly died in February, and then I lost a lot of weight, and I was able to do things like start this podcast and interact with a bunch of folks about projects that had been on the back burner and really kind of reset my life. I live in a better place. I take better care of myself, and I'm really trying to gear up for years of productivity. Most markedly in that was the fixing of my teeth just a week and a half ago. You know, I hadn't been to a dentist in a very long time. I'd had a very bad dentist when I was in my teens. I just wouldn't go back. And then after that, in my 30s, I went to a dentist and I found their attitude terrible. And so I didn't go again for a long time. And going in there, you know, I found them really friendly and having a good attitude on my part. I was able to agree to having my fillings switched out on one side of my mouth, and it feels so much better. And I'm saying this out of the blue because it comes as a result of this podcast and the support people have given me. And it also indicates another random subject, which is Patreon itself. Hopefully this will be lost to history, but December of 2017 will also have to be known as the month in which Patreon shot itself in the foot so effectively and so terribly that people left it in droves. And it was because they changed the fee structure. But it wasn't just that they changed the fee structure. They changed it in a way in which they claimed it was to do one thing, which was make things better for creators. But in fact, it mostly just enriched them, and it showed a complete lack of understanding of their business. And this also snapped me out of a haze. You know, when I first started this podcast, it was connected entirely to Patreon. And I didn't mind that because it was such an effective platform for people to donate towards each episode. And once I was able to start paying off some pretty erratic bills, I was so happy in my life that I didn't pay attention to the fact that I had centralized a lifeline. When Patreon executed this top class betrayal, I, like a lot of people, had to question what their motives were and where things would go and whether or not I wanted my podcast's income and the paying of my bills that was going so well to be tied to a company of such shaky ethics and approach. And so I have since moved things to podcast.textfiles.com. In the future, this will be the way to find out what platforms can be used to support this podcast, everything from directly going through PayPal to using Patreon to using other services that I've been connected to, like Ko-fi, which I guess is pronounced coffee, and LibraPay, which is as fun and strange a payment service as I've ever seen. Between all of these items, I really hope to have people be able to support the podcast, but at no point feel they are trapped through one way to reach me. So back to here at the archive. I'm out here on the floor of the archive, which used to be the Sunday school, and I'm sitting at a desk that I sometimes take over when I'm here, and humming in the background is this very interesting contraption. Noise reduction will remove its constant unpleasant hum, but I assure you there is a machine with fans down the room that is echoing throughout this floor. And what this machine does is actually rather miraculous and in some ways an indicator of the amazing things the Internet Archive does that many people probably just don't know. What this contraption is a combination of a bunch of satellite TV tuners and network connections to a variety of hard drives. And 24/7, it is connecting to satellite television and it is downloading all of it. Yes, all of it. It is downloading every channel that we can reach from this building and putting them down into video streams of various chunks. And through that, we then split them apart. And we don't make all of it publicly accessible, but what we do make accessible are television news programs. So if you go to archive.org/TV, you can get to every news program that had captioning going back to 2009. I mean, you can type in a word and you'll see it where it appeared on any news program, along with topic clouds and interlinking connections to all of the other shows that might have used that term. It's an incredible tool, an amazing resource, and I feel like a lot of people don't even know it exists. But tirelessly, this machine is humming away, making these files for us and providing them to the world. The Internet Archive has an amazing problem. We do one thing really well, which is the Wayback Machine. People go to web.archive.org and they're able to connect to web pages going back 20 years. And for millions of people a day, that is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the Internet Archive in their lives. But meanwhile, there's a whole variety of other collections that the archive makes available all the time, and people, they're just not aware of it. If you follow me a lot, you'll find out about the software collections, or I'll link to some sort of magazine or book or movie that we have online, and from there people might figure out just the incredible amount of media that the archive makes available. But for others, it's just the web and nothing else. To support the archive's funding drive, I ended up going for something I called 30 Days of Stuff. And on my Twitter feed, I have been linking to something new every day, kind of indicating that it is a tip of an iceberg of other content that's deep within the archive stacks, and imploring people at the end to consider donating to the archive. If you need that URL and it works all year, it's archive.org/donate. Money you give there helps pay for me and pay for a lot of what the archive does. You know, we always are adding things along all sorts of lines. For instance, Brewster has been supervising the addition of tens of thousands of 78 RPM records. And the tweet I wrote about the 78 RPM records ended up being one of my most popular tweets in 10 plus years of Twitter. And meanwhile, people are giving me all sorts of other materials just because they think it has to go up there. And there's something I call the narrative. The narrative says that there is a story when people want to give things to a place like the Internet Archive. They want to know that there's something that they care about, that we care about it too, and that we will take what they give us and we will turn it into digital form, either immediately or relatively soon, and from there, it will be permanent, protected by everyone, and available to the world forever. It's a very powerful narrative, and I believe that we can do most of it pretty well, and we can accomplish a lot of it for an incredibly small cost. For example, I had somebody contact me and let me know that they had 4 terabytes of manga. Yes, manga, Japanese comics. And would I be interested in putting it up? And I said, sure. So I've actually clogged up a machine called the Fortress of Solitude, which is where I do most of my work, with manga. 4.4 terabytes of manga. Turn out to be incredibly hard to process and involves the machine basically not doing much else for days on end. But, you know, bless them. Manga is interesting. It is part of culture and it has an extremely rich subculture around it. So it wasn't that hard to come up with the narrative for a bunch of files. I assured them that it would go up and it is going up. Harder, however, are when people give me large collections of paper materials because there's a scanning process behind that, and scanning is a rather involved and complicated endeavor. And while I would love to be able to have my own army of scanners working 24/7, that just doesn't exist. Digital files will always be ingested faster than paper or magnetic media. To give you an idea of how complicated scanning can be, I was involved in a scanning project just a couple days ago that ended up eating up, I figured out it was something like 7 hours of my time. And this was a conclusion of something like 8 months of back and forth discussion with a really great guy who happened to have a few old items in his collection. His name was Chris, and Chris had an old directory from 1942. It's the 1942 to 1943 Negro Directory in Los Angeles, California. And what it is a phone directory focused on black and black welcoming businesses in Los Angeles, with some listings going up into all of California, Oregon, and Washington State. And it's a phone book. I mean, in many ways, it's a phone book, but it also is a call to arms, and it's a declaration of the importance of supporting your community and providing linkages for people to find each other, either through the phone or in person or by patronizing different businesses and highlighting all sorts of services and other projects that people can get involved in. It's just a beautiful item, and it's pretty rare. And the copy that Chris brought to me was in such fragile shape that we had to scan it at 1200 dots per inch on a flatbed, which meant by hand putting each page on, scanning it slowly, flipping it over, and going on. And that's why it took 7 hours across 2 days, and it was 238 pages. And Chris entrusted me with his beloved directory for those 2 days. He had to leave, of course, and I really appreciate that, because the file is now online, and this item, which previously was only on paper, is already up and providing information and history and reference for people to use. The most weird thing we found in it was a whistling school, and it brought us into this entirely weird subject of the whistling schools of Agnes Woodward, who ran, I swear to goodness, a whistling school in early 20th century Los Angeles. And it thrived, and there are beautiful photos of it. And once you know about Agnes Woodward, you can find her name everywhere, because it turns out this whistling school was pretty big potatoes at the time. I wouldn't have known any of that if I hadn't been able to look through these pages digitally over and over whenever I wanted to, and then provide it to other people to reference digitally. But what am I going to do about hundreds or thousands of these pages that are sitting in our physical archive? The answer is, I'm going to do the best I can. But having all of these different items go through this process and go online will be a real engineering and organizational project that will consume a few years of my life. Years that I think will be well worth it, and the benefits that we reap from it will be legion. But here at the onset of it, you know, it's pretty daunting to me. And if it's daunting to me, you know it's daunting. One of the things about coming back to the archive after a few months is that many of its wonders strike me anew, and there was a really nice moment I had where I was waiting outside to give a tour to a couple people, and they were on their way, and I just noticed that there were pieces of paper that had been taken out of one of our trash cans and kind of strewn against some of our plants, and you know, there's that moment where you waver about picking up litter, I guess, and I looked at them, and I suddenly remembered how in love with this project I am. You know, how much I love that the Internet Archive exists and how I'm able to play a part in it and be able to provide people with so much amazing history and information. And I went over and I picked up all this paper and put it back into the trash, because it was on a building that I loved, and I didn't want that building to look anything less than its best, because inside is the best, you know? There's people who are working here who have dedicated themselves to making sure that you out there have as much information as possible, and they're doing it at salaries that are not Silicon Valley level. You know, this is a nonprofit. Things run close to the bone. So many wonderful people inside that have become my friends and colleagues and who I talk to, and we're all so dedicated to bringing this information out. So while 2017 has been, like I said, an up and a down, a great shining moment and a desperate deep low, on the whole, it's still another year doing what I love and connecting to so many wonderful people online and off, and making the world in some way a smarter, more enjoyable, more learned, more emotional place. This is Jason Scott. You've been listening to the Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It podcast. Thanks so much to James Bakoyanu, Sam Johnston, Stefan Arendts, and Astrid Smith, along with the hundreds of other supporters who have come together to make this podcast a reality. It's now episode 13. I went over the major hump that I have found before where podcasts just kind of give up after about 3 months. I'm going to be doing a few more podcasts in the rest of the year. I'll be back in my home in New York and working from there all through 2018. In terms of the money, I ended up having all sorts of contributions and help from people across the entire year, which I am sure is going to translate to a tax nightmare. As a result, I've been socking away some of the Patreon money and the other contributed money to make sure that I can withstand whatever my accountant comes up with for what I owe the government in April. Of course, I'm still paying off bills here and there. When I had my dentistry work done, it turned out that my dental insurance was pretty good, but I would still have to pay a few $100s to cover the replaced fillings in my teeth. And as somebody who uses his mouth as much as I do, I was very nervous, but I was not nervous about the money. The fact that I was able to withstand a $500 surprise charge that I didn't know was going to be there, that's a direct result of your contributions to this podcast. You are really helping me, and I want to reach out to thank all of you, even if it's not by name, because this podcast has really positively changed my life, and I hope that as I get better at it, and as I'm able to talk about things in all realms of technology and what we are as people, you'll derive some entertainment and happiness from it as well. Thanks so much.